Welcome to the We Have a Meeting podcast, where we sit down with the world's smartest thinkers to give you the actionable tools, insights, and strategies that could make your life more impactful and productive. This week, we have a meeting with
Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. We've got a very, very special guest this week. Someone who's going to help us understand a question that I think we've struggled with quite a lot. It's how do we speak so that people want to listen? Probably something that's been baffling business leaders, salespeople, wannabe public speakers, something that me and Jack deal with on our Monday morning meetings a lot. And why not bring in an expert who can help us with that? So we brought in the UK's leading elocution coach, James Percy Smith, who's going to do his best to make us professionals in the next half an hour. James, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. Thanks for being here. So if you could, are you able to sum up in 60 to 90 seconds who you are and the problem you solve?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm James, as you very well introduced me to the show, and I run a company called The Elocution Coach, which provides, or we provide coaching in speech and communication skills to individuals and corporates and companies. And realistically, that can incorporate all sorts of different things. So public speaking, for example, accent softening, accent reduction, and generally people who want to improve their speech or improve their articulation as well.
Okay. Could you give us an example of what's a problem that would be happening in a business where they think, I need to pick up the phone to James?
It depends on the person and it depends on the environment. So a lot of people for us, I mean, if you look at our clients across the board, I think generally it's about getting people to the point where they feel comfortable in their speech. So from a communication standpoint, it could be a salesperson who is finding that their knowledge and their technique per se is good, but when they're speaking to people on the phone, they're speaking to people in Zoom calls, they're really struggling to actually engage the other side. So that's one example. On the flip side, you've got people who find that they feel self-conscious or they feel judged in relation to their accent. And that could be because of comments from other people. That could be an internal thing as well. And from their point of view, they want to soften it or reduce it in order to feel more comfortable around the people they're speaking to.
Okay. So it sounds like it's more of like a confidence thing rather than we're going to send all of our team to you, James, because they sound like yobs. It's more of a something
100%.
Internal.
I would always say that in terms of clients, the majority of them will actually improve their speech just from their confidence going up. And it's funny you touch on the corporate side of things in terms of a company turning around and saying, right, I'm going to send everybody to the elocution coach. We actually look at applications and wonder sometimes whether that is the individual who's wanting to get training or whether it's their boss on the other side. And if I'm being really honest with you, there are some times where we look at an application and reject that application, not because we don't think the person, we can help that person, but because we think there's probably some decisions going on that are not their decisions. And that means from a coaching perspective, it's very difficult actually to help that person if it's not them wanting to make that change.
Yeah, no, totally. I guess it's like any kind of coaching or training, if they're not motivated to fix the problem themselves, no matter how much you throw at the problem, it's
Absolutely.
Not going to make it easier. So we, a large part of our audience is salespeople. So they might know the right techniques to do. They might know the words to say in the right order, but they might not be sounding right. So what are the common issues you see when dealing with salespeople, and how do you kind of make them effective communicators?
I think there's probably two big problems. And it's not usually to do with necessarily the technique side of things. A lot of people have the knowledge. They know what to be doing. From a sales perspective, they can sit there on the phone with a prospect and they can convince them from a technical point of view. They have all this knowledge about the product, the service that they're trying to promote. I think there's probably two things in the back end that aren't happening. Number one, they're not practicing. So they might learn a new technique. They might learn a new way of negotiating with someone. And they think, well, that's great. I'll use that in my next call. But they're not actually practicing it. And with everything that we do with clients, for example, and the same with people who want to improve their ability to sell products, for example, you need to build it into your muscle memory. So if you find a new technique and you think, this is great, this will work, great. Practice it at home. Practice it in the mirror. Practice it with a friend or a colleague if you can. And do that again and again and again and again. Because when you go into that live situation, that live meeting, you need to come across in a very calm, comfortable manner for that other person to feel at ease. And it won't happen if you haven't practiced it. And the second problem, I think, is mindset. I think we all, in general, we all look at our jobs, and particularly in sales, you think, right, okay, I've got a list of things I need to get through. I've got so many hours to do so, and I need to get this many sales today or tomorrow. And that means you're driving that conversation internally for yourself. Whereas actually, if you flip that mindset and you focus on the person you're talking to and think, okay, how do I want that person to feel? How do I want that person to react or engage with me? That then changes the way you engage with that person. And that's probably the two biggest problems we see from a sales perspective, at least.
Yeah, and obviously, like, when we, less so in our office, but in sales companies that I've worked in the past, it's like, right, we're going to do call listening. You play someone's voice, and the first thing they say is, oh, I hate my voice. I don't want to listen to my voice. And I think there's that little bit of attachment to outcome. If you're so attached to the end result, then you're not going to be at your best performance. What are the, like, I guess, like, actual physical attributes that it can, obviously, in terms of mindset, it can present itself in many different ways. How would it actually present itself in the voice if you're so attached and you've got the wrong mindset? What kind of things would you hear?
I think, again, it depends on the environment. If you take someone in sales who has a script, and scripts have pros and cons, because of course with scripts it means that as a company you can assure that that person is going to deliver the right thing to that customer or that prospect. But if you are the person delivering that script and you feel, oh God, I hate my voice, I hate the way I sound, you can tense up very, very, very quickly. And that means that the customer or the prospect on the other end can feel like it's almost like a false conversation. And that obviously manifests from a vocal perspective. So if you are starting to strain and seize up, generally you'll find that it sounds almost a little bit robotic. And you have that a lot, especially when you speak to people, I'm sure you both have as well, when someone calls you and you think, are you training at the moment? Are you, is this your first sales call? That happens a lot, obviously. But of course, then also, if you think about sales and the way that you communicate with those prospects, I think people forget to listen. So a lot of the time, when someone calls me out of the blue, one of these, you know, cold calls, they'll say, oh, how are you today, Mr. Smith? And I'll give them a response. And I can pretty much guarantee that about 90% of them will go, good, okay, and then move on straight away. And I can tell they haven't listened because it's another call of 100 calls today. But actually, if they responded with something that showed that they had listened to my response, I would now feel far more comfortable that they would listen to the rest of my responses later on in that call.
It's very interesting you say that. That wasn't, for anyone listening, that wasn't like a premeditated conversation. We don't ask people how they are when we cold call them. I think it's the worst thing to do in the world, because it's just like, you don't care. Make it about the prospect. Mm-hmm. Get to the value. Tell them why you're calling, and asking people how they are is kind of irrelevant. So that's quite interesting. Do you say anything like when they ask you how you are? It sounds like you might slip in a little like, bit of a nuance or a code word just to see if they are listening.
Not particularly. I suppose I come back. I mean, this is actually a tip for most people, actually, in general. Forget sales for a second. Is when someone asks you how you are, actually respond with the truth. A lot of people will respond with the default, I'm good or I'm okay. And actually, if you respond, even if it's negative, if you respond with something that is true to you that day, it might be, yeah, I'm all right, but I'm a little bit tired today. I had a pretty bad sleep last night. It can either take them off guard, in which case they might give you actually a response that you're looking for, or on the flip side, they might just respond with that default, oh, good, thanks, and then move on to the product or the service they're trying to sell you over the phone. And as you say, generally, cold calls are the worst ones because a lot of companies will enforce that, and they'll call and say, oh, hi, Mr. Smith, how are you today? And it's the first red flag. You're just like, no, I don't want to speak to you. Yeah. Have you got my number?
We actually know a sales trainer who says that his mum died last night every time someone asks him.
Oh, wow.
To see exactly the point that you were making around some people just skip over, and automatically they'll hear that and go, okay, well, the reason for my call today is just to test, like, were you listening? And he was saying 9 times out of 10, people just don't even take it in. So yeah, it's interesting. So one thing that I think we're conscious of is, if you imagine, as I'm sure you're well aware of, you don't even need to say, is body language is such a massive part of communicating. And then when we're on the phone, we're taking that massive element away. So when we're left just with our voice and we're just exposed as just, this is my voice, what are the characteristics of the voice that make it engaging for someone to hear on the other end? Is it the depth of the voice? Is it a certain tone? What is it that our ears are looking for as something that's worthwhile listening to?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It depends on the study. But, for example, the most common study would say that 55% of your communication is linked to body language. Another study would say 70%. But, essentially, it's above the 50% mark. So, as soon as you jump onto that phone call, that's it. It's gone, and you have to rely on that voice. There are, again, unfortunately, lots of environmental factors involved here. But, generally, across the board, we always talk about the three Ps. So, for example, in terms of your pace, that is absolutely critical. Absolutely critical, because the pace defines how that comes across to the other side, how that person feels, how that person kind of considers the product that you're trying to sell as well. Obviously, in terms of pausing, that can be very effective from a sales perspective, and it depends again on the conversation you're having and what you're trying to do to that person. But if you can pause, it allows the other person to actually absorb what you might have just said. And it can also create a little bit more authority in your voice sometimes, depending on obviously what you're wanting to sell as well. Pitch is probably one of the biggest ones. A lot of people, particularly in sales, unfortunately, because it is, call 129 of the day, they find themselves almost getting into a rhythm. And that rhythm means that monotony starts to set in. And that becomes quite difficult as well, because from an engagement point of view, if you are flatlining in terms of your pitch, it can become very dull very quickly and people start to switch off. So generally, to make your voice more engaging, you need to have those three elements going at the same time. And it doesn't mean suddenly, talking like Mickey Mouse. Ultimately, it just means using a little bit more of your range and using some areas that you probably wouldn't use day to day if you're sitting at home and, watching Netflix and speaking to your partner.
So a couple of bits there to kind of unpack the pausing part. Is pausing taking the place of ums and ahs? Is that what we're looking for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hesitations. I could talk about hesitations all day. Hesitations, they're an odd one, because we need a small amount of hesitations to make us sound human. They are a humanistic quality. It's when it becomes a habitual exercise and people start doing it for the sake of it, and it's completely subconscious. People don't actually realise how much you do it. And I urge anyone listening to this to actually record themselves talking to someone and then sitting down, watching, listening back, and then writing down how many times they say or ah. But yeah, ultimately, starting to get rid of those hesitations can make you sound far more confident to the other side.
Wow, okay. And is there... How do we practice that? What's the actual practical, because I imagine it's subconscious, isn't it, a lot of it?
Yeah. So essentially, if you take one of your, for example, if you're in sales and you've got a sales pitch that you do day in, day out, take that sales pitch, practice it in front of the mirror, or even better, record yourself with a video camera or an iPhone and watch that back. And obviously, first note how many times. Then go back, do it again. And every time you get to the end of a thought or a sentence, just take that moment, create that little bit of a gap, and then move on to the next one and the next one and the next one. Now, it will feel incredibly uncomfortable. And you'll be thinking in your head, this is way too long. The pause is going on way too long. And it's not at all. It's psychology. It just makes you feel like that time is going on and on and on. And it's not at all. It's a very, very short amount of time. At the end of statements, for example, a lot of people start to fill out what they're saying. So you could get to the end of a statement and say, well, great, that's a little bit about me, or that's great, that's a little bit about the product. And of course, that person knows it's a little bit about you or a little bit about the product. So at the end of that, instead of saying that, just create a pause, create a silence, and the other person will have to then chip in because it feels uncomfortable if they don't. And that's quite a good way, actually, negotiation-wise, of getting people to then respond if you're concerned they're not going to respond at the end.
Yeah, that's great.
Very big fans. Amazing. So me and Zach, we both have our separate teams. Zach's down in Bournemouth and I'm up in Manchester. And obviously we are the authority in the room. You probably wouldn't feel it some days if you came in. You might think we're the children that are playing. But how important is tone, and what role does that play when it comes to being an authoritative figure?
A huge amount. If you look at the study I talked about earlier on, the 55% is body language. 38% is tone of voice. which is huge. And 7% is actually based on the words that you use or the spoken word. So when you think about it, in terms of your delivery of your ideas to your team or to whoever you're talking to, even a prospect in sales, that tone is absolutely critical. And it depends, again, sorry to say the word environment, but it depends on the environment. You know, there are going to be times where you want to come across in a far more assertive manner. And things like downward inflections, for example, will create that environment straight away. But if you're going into a team meeting and you're thinking, actually, I want to spur a little bit of creativity here. I want people to start discussing ideas with me. You can then use a little bit of a lifting inflection to almost prompt that discussion. So you have to have that toolkit. You have to have those different tones that you might need to use to change the way the other person responds to you. And again, that depends on the environment. It depends on what you want to do to that person.
Wow. So if somebody is just moved into a position of authority, what would you say is like the top takeaway when they're focusing on their voice? What is the main thing they should be working on? Is it bringing in that late night DJ voice, or is it like a bellow? What would you say?
So there's two things. Pausing, 100%. Just pausing by itself will make you sound far more authoritative. But if you look at it from a tone of voice point of view, statistically and scientifically, the lower the pitch, the more likely you're going to sound authoritative. So if you are someone who tends to use the higher regions of your range, then think about starting to use the lower region of your range instead. The only word of a warning with that is what you don't want to do is then do the opposite and start flatlining. And then you become a little bit monotonous. But using that lower range in terms of the majority would be better from an authority point of view.
That's interesting. It reminds me, when I first started off in sales about 10 years ago, my go-to phone voice was higher than I actually speak, faster than I actually speak, and probably with a lot more hesitation. Probably because of just, you know, feeling so nervous about it. But now when I'm jumping on calls, it's almost like I'm willing myself to talk with a deeper voice, with a quieter voice as well, and certainly to kind of slow it right down. And it just feels like it's a lot more comfortable, because what I was finding when I was talking higher when I first started off was there was kind of nowhere to go. It's like I peaked. And if you asked the question within that, it's like, how do I go even higher than that? It's really, really unnatural. So it makes sense that's happening, and I think we often hear it with people that start new in the team, that's kind of an automatic default setting within their voice. A bit of a tricky one then for you, and this might be another environmental question, but I know what inauthenticity sounds like, and I think other people do as well. So when we could all sit in a room and pitch the same product, and it's not about the person who knows the most about it. It's like it's almost the person who sounds like they're the most authentically involved in that conversation. But if you were to ask me what inauthenticity sounds like, I probably couldn't give you like a direct answer. So have you found anything that's what an inauthentic voice sounds like, or inauthentic behaviour sounds like?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, but yeah, absolutely. So again, going back to sales, for those people that have scripts or they have policies, there's so many internal policies nowadays where people say, oh, you've got to say this, you've got to say this, or, you know, use this type of terminology. Make sure the phraseology that you're using is you. Obviously, there are going to be times, unfortunately, if your boss says you can't, then, you know, there's no other option. But if you have the option to use a slightly different word that feels more comfortable to you, or a slightly different introduction that sounds a little bit more comfortable to you, then use it. Because otherwise you will sound false. You will sound almost inauthentic. So try and utilize the phrases and the words that you use day to day. That's the first thing. In terms of going back a little bit to the listening and the responding side of things, I think people, again, in sales and in general in communication, rely far too heavily on questions. They think that questions are going to be the solution to the whole conversation. And it's completely untrue. It doesn't matter what conversation you're having, whether you're in sales, whether you're in a corporate meeting, whether you're speaking to a customer that's complaining, you are negotiating that conversation. And in negotiation, the worst thing you can do is fire question after question after question. Because, again, in sales, you have that list of things you have to ask the customer. Think about different ways of doing it. You might fire one question at that prospect. They might come back with a bit of a response, and you might be able to, for example, repeat a few of the words they've said that might actually prompt them to come back with more information, and then again and again and again. You can use little phrases like "it seems like" or "it looks like" or "to me, based on what you've told me, I think this," and that's going to prompt, if you use that pause at the end, going to prompt them to come back with something else. And that's going to make the conversation flow far better. But if you are being asked question after question after question, you are going to sound almost like you're interrogating that person, which could be, it could be, it could destroy that sale.
Yeah, that's so something that we practice. We're big on mirroring and labeling because, especially if you're reaching out to someone cold, they've not said, "Please ring me and cross-examine me on the phone call," mm-hmm. or "interrogate me." And also there's something, I've got young children. And there's something about when they've had a rubbish day at school, being able to say, "Sounds like you've had a bit of a rubbish day at school," rather than running in and being like the dad and who's wanting to go and tell off and "let me save the day" and or anything. It's just the initial thing is just I've basically saying, "I've heard what you've said," is kind of all we're trying to put across.
Absolutely. And also using, so for example, with labelling mirroring, that's great. That's a really solid technique and it works in almost all situations. But make sure you're also utilizing what you're talking about with that person. So you can summarize, for example, what that person said. By summarizing what the person said, it shows that you are actively listening to that person. So I would always, if I'm sitting there on a call with someone and I want to go back later on to something they've said, I will just note it down. I won't respond to it at the time. They might mention something very, very trivial, but I think actually there's a link there to this call. So I'll write it down on my notes. Later on in the call, maybe 3-4 minutes in, I'll say, "Well, actually, Judy, you said earlier on about this. I'd like you just to tell me a little bit more, whatever it is that I need them to say." So that by itself makes that person go, "Oh yeah, no, I did say that earlier on. I did say that. I forgot that." And it makes them feel more valued as someone on the phone that you're speaking to on a Zoom meeting or whatever it is. It makes them feel more valued, more listened to. So that's also something to bear in mind with things like labelling and mirroring.
I think it's so fascinating because obviously you're teaching it from the voice angle. We're teaching it from the sales angle, but it's the same book. It's the same message that we're all promoting. And I think the silence is golden and people feel awkward in the side of that, especially some of the reps that we've got. They'll be like, I just want to fill it, or they'll ask a question and at the end of that question they'll ask 32 other questions or try and preempt what the answer is going to be. And it's like, you are allowed to just go, and why do you feel that way? Silence. So it's, I think it's people's insecurities. So you may have touched on it, but there may just be a few other bits. But how else would other people's insecurities like present themselves when it comes to tone of voice?
All the time. It's funny when we speak to people on the phone. When someone applies to work with us, I generally and the team that speak to people as well on the phone will generally go into the psychology of it, and someone will come to us with almost a little bit of a kind of a self-diagnosis, and we'll go, "Okay, where do you think that comes from? What's prompted you to start doing that?" And they'll go, "Oh, no, it's something that's just come into play." No, where's that come from? What's happened previously to make that happen? And, for example, there have been people we've worked with before who will say, "Oh, I waffle too much and I talk and people get bored of it. Where does that come from? What happened in your childhood? What happened at university when you were, going into your first job?" And they say, "Oh, well, when I was a kid, people used to cut me off a lot." Well, okay, there you go. That's why. So there's a lot of insecurities like that that can actually present themselves in adult life. One of those, for example, is hesitations. So if you're someone who, as a kid, people kept questioning you and, in your first job, you kept getting interrogated by your boss, you might therefore be insecure about whether your answers are actually valid. So therefore, you're hesitating because you're not sure. Lifting inflections are another example where if you're not quite sure whether this is the right thing to say, you might lift up towards the end. And that person on the other end of the phone, particularly in sales, is therefore going to question whether the product you're describing is real. Is that a real product? Is this a real company? Am I supposed to be investing in this company? So those little things can definitely start to filter into your voice and your tone of voice as well.
Wow, that was very, very interesting. I think I know that you do a lot of work and it feels like there's like a psychology or like a more of a science to people's voices. And I think what are your thoughts about people when they're like, their identity being their voice, and if they were to change, maybe they're losing a little bit of their identity?
It's a very good question. And there's a mixed answer to that, because again, it depends on what that person is trying to achieve. So if someone comes to us and they're looking, for example, from a communication or a public speaking point of view, they want to change the way they sound to the other person. We generally split the work. About 50% of it is around the technique and the technical side of building those skills and building that toolkit. The other 50% is definitely looking at the psychology of it, because we have to make sure that person is not just, Zach, I think you were saying about inauthenticity earlier on, they're not just creating a fake voice, not creating a fake bit of communication. It has to be authentic. From an accent point of view, because again, there are people that we work with that want to soften their accent and reduce their accent. Again, we always ask the question, why? Why do you want to do that? And of course, if someone genuinely wants to soften their accent, then we will help them with that. But your accent is your identity. And I'm sorry to say that for a lot of people that we speak with, it's about the comments of other people that have caused them to want to change their accent. And it could be as simple as people saying, oh, that's a weird accent, or that's an interesting accent. And it's weird, because in society, we wouldn't go up to someone and say, ah, you've got a weird body shape. Well, you'd hope you wouldn't. But we seem to do this with accents all the time. And it can be very innocent. But unfortunately, if that's the 12th comment that person's got that day about their accent, it can make them feel very insecure about it. So, yeah, we have to look at it from both angles.
And it's a bit of a tricky one, because I think from a sales point of view as well, it's like accents are a good thing. But if we're looking, like, I've never had a sales call from somebody incredibly Welsh, but do you know what I mean? But I could imagine it's a little bit like, what's going on? It's a bit like maybe overwhelming or something. Like if it's an accent that you're not typically used to, all my sales calls that I receive are someone northern, someone Cockney, whatever. If it's an accent that you're not used to, do you think that generates a response in I guess the Absolutely. Receiver's mind? Yeah.
It's a response that shouldn't exist, but it does. And again, that's why a lot of people will come to us and say, look, I've had people hang up. I mean, we've had people who've, you know, in terms of knowledge and experience and their job roles are top of the top, like creme de la creme. And because of their accent, people have put the phone down. They think it's a sales call, which is awful, isn't it? But they put the phone down. They come to us and say, I can't have this. I need to be able to speak like this or this or this. So it shouldn't happen, but of course, that bias does exist, and you'll pick up the phone to someone, and if they start using a certain accent, naturally a lot of people will have that prejudgment because of that. And it's a strange one, really, because, you know, for us, we have to remain very impartial about this whole thing, but we're very much aware that the reality is that a lot of people will have that that subconscious bias.
Sure. So can I ask a difficult question then, James? What do you think is more important if you're a salesperson, the authenticity in their voice or the knowledge and technique?
I think it's both. It has to be both. You know,
you can't say both. That's a cop-out answer. Okay. That's why I said it's going to be a difficult question, James.
If I have to pick one, the authenticity. Because if you go back to that age-old ratio, if 7% of your communication comes from the spoken word, everything else is more important. So the tone of your voice and your body language. And of course, you get rid of body language on the phone. So now you've only got the tone of your voice as the majority. And there are some people out there who have absolutely zero knowledge, but are able to make very, very quick sales because they sound like they know what they're talking about. They sound like they're a friendly person on the phone, having a quick chat because of this or that. So I think it has to be the authenticity. And the tone of your voice is far more important sometimes than the knowledge or the actual techniques you've got underneath.
That's interesting, though. But is it Julian Treasure that we talk about a lot, Zach?
Yeah.
So I was listening to one of his podcasts, and I think he spoke to the leader of TEDx, which is obviously like the popular. And he said, actually, the content is more important. Like, if he had a choice, whether content or the performer of the performer and their voice and how interesting it was to watch, they'd go for content every time, because it gets annoying with somebody if they're flamboyant but they're talking nonsense. But if there's somebody that's clever but monotonous, would you agree with that, James?
I would agree with that to a degree. So obviously, if the content is passable, then the tone of voice and the authenticity is far more important. If the content and the knowledge is not passable, aka it is absolute rubbish, then I'd have to agree with that. Because, you know, as he has pointed out, you know, you could sit on the phone to someone in a meeting with someone, and if they are spouting rubbish, you are going to switch off straight away because you won't believe that that person is actually valuable to you. But if it's content that's passable and you think, actually, it's not the best speech in the world, it's not the best content in the world, it's not the best knowledge in the world, but it's still passable, it's going to be far more influenceable in the way that you deliver that than anything else.
Wow. Quite a lot to unpack there in terms of... But I think we would agree with all of this, but it's nice to hear someone reaffirming a lot of our beliefs. There was a question in here that you've actually answered, so I'm gonna jump in with just a new one. It's nothing controversial.
Mm-hmm. And why not?
We often highlight to our team and to even people that we're speaking to and consulting with that often sales, for example, you can find it replicated in just normal society or in other job roles. So we might say, actually, a sales call should sound like a therapist conversation. Mm. You know, it should be a lot of questions and listening and, as you're saying, pause and a lot of things that you're saying, but even with like the timbre and the tone of someone's voice. So in terms of when you're trying to highlight or show someone or inspire yourself, here's a job role that does it well, or here's an individual that does it well, what's kind of a good example of where to find inspiration of what a voice should sound like?
That's a really, really good question. I think there's probably a huge amount of roles that do that. A huge amount of roles. And I think you're absolutely right, because, you know, for example, it might be in the sales side of things, someone says to you, well, you've given me three different product options here. Which one's best for me? Now, of course, if you go, well, product C is going to be best for you, they might turn around and say, well, I can't afford product C. So now suddenly product A and product B are going to sound far less, valuable to that person. Because if you turn that around to that person and say, well, okay, realistically, from your point of view, what would you prefer and how would this benefit you? And they turn around and say, well, blah, 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 blah. Then you can obviously advise the best thing. So sometimes you have to switch those things around. I think there's probably a few different areas, but generally from a medical point of view, for example, because of the way that doctors and medical professionals have to deal with certain people that might not, for example, be able to make the right decision for themselves, they naturally have a very good way of persuading without necessarily interrogating. And you're absolutely right about the therapy side of things. I think you have to look sometimes at sales a little bit from a therapeutic point of view. And of course, people in the police as well. You know, I'm going to the public services for a second, but in the police, they have to make, police officers have to make or persuade certain people to make certain decisions sometimes in their best interest. And of course, it doesn't always go to plan, as we can see from the TV, but naturally they have to have that element of persuasion in their voice.
That's interesting. I've met a doctor recently at like a stag do and a wedding, and we got talking about what I do and what they do, and he was like, can I get some advice, because I feel like I'm going in too hard, like you've got to do this because of the facts. And I kind of highlighted like a couple of different like Chris Voss techniques on what will get him, like, do you know what I mean? We'll get people like opening up and being like, why wouldn't you get your COVID jab, and switching it all round. And he was just like, bloody hell, why have I never tried this? But I think until your eyes are open to it, it's just the way that you see the world and you've got that bias. But then when you know about, like, oh, actually, that's not how, as human beings, we kind of relate. It doesn't have to be hard facts. It can be a bit more like, I care, I'm listening, why not? And you can't convince someone to do anything against their will. It's a case of, like, I can only just show you the options and the alternatives.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got doctors, we've got, you know, even surgeons that are with us because of that very reason. They need to be able to deliver some really bad news, or they need to be able to persuade, you know, a patient that isn't necessarily making the right decision, persuade them to make the right decision. So we do have clients like that. I suppose the other example would be journalists. You know, journalists and interviewers have a wonderful way of getting politicians to say things that they then backtrack on and start to dig a hole and never get out of that hole. So that's probably a little bit more of a public example of a job that requires that natural skill set.
Thinking of Louis Theroux.
Ah, Louis Theroux.
Yeah.
Ah.
The Louis Theroux pause. We love it.
He's got a new series coming out as well, which is all very exciting.
I know. Yeah. Stormzy as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best thing in the world.
Absolutely. I've started noticing on, I don't know if you've listened to his podcast series, that...
I haven't.
Well, he's got a podcast series and he'll ask some tough questions, but after he's asked this series of tough questions, he says, I just want to check in for a minute and just find out, like, how you're feeling, how your energy is. Are we still comfortable talking about this? Yeah. Which I think is quite a good... I've started bringing it into... Our sales style is quite challenging, and just to make sure someone's either prefaced with, this is about to be challenging, or we close on, are you still all right for us to talk about this? You know, it's managing state is quite interesting. Okay, so me and Jack have recently started being invited in to do public speaking. The most public speaking we've done is being drunk on a field as teenagers and showing off to our friends. If you had 5 minutes to give us, here's what you should be thinking about when you're up there, to make sure you don't rush it or fluff it or anything like that. What points would you give us to make the most out of that and get our points across?
Okay, 5 minutes. So I think, first of all, practice but don't over-practice. This can be the downfall for a lot of people. They will over practice. They will have a pitch that's so important to them and they'll sit there for the next 7 days practicing it for 2 hours at night. And that's great to a degree, because obviously you're then prepared in your head. But at the same time, it can become flat because it becomes a little bit robotic when you deliver it. So from that perspective, do practice, I would say, around three times if you're doing a speech or a presentation. But that's it. Once you've reached that three limit, unless it really is that bad, leave it. Let it sit, right? Don't think about it again. Breathing is probably one of the most important things that you can do to slow yourself down and to be able to be heard and to relax. If you're someone who gets quite nervous or anxious about doing any form of public speaking or presentations, just start to breathe. If you Google breathing techniques for public speaking, you will find a huge wealth of articles that have all the different bits and bobs technique wise, but it's so quick and easy. Some of those are easier to do than others. Some of those are a little bit a little bit embarrassing, so obviously you might want to do this in a private meeting room, but some of those you can literally do in the middle of a board meeting. You can sit there and do it without anybody noticing, and of course it brings your blood pressure down. It causes that feeling of anxiety to go away a little bit. And I think the other thing as well, which is for a lot of our clients a big problem, is articulation. A lot of people will call us and say, I feel like I stumble, or I fluff, or I run over my words. And that's usually down to the strength of their articulator, so your tongue and your lips. It's so quick and easy to build that up. Again, if you Google articulation strengthening exercises, you'll find so many tongue twisters. I always bang on about tongue twisters with clients because they're so seemingly simple. We do them at school as kids. And obviously at school, it's who's the fastest, who can do this the quickest. As an adult, take that tongue twister and think about the sounds exploding outside the mouth and start to build, in terms of pace-wise, build up that pace over time. As you practice those tongue twisters, you will find it gets faster and faster. And that is your almost checkbox to go, okay, well, my articulation is definitely getting better because I'm getting faster and faster without fluffing those words. And of course, when you go into that presentation, that speech, that meeting, you will find naturally that those systems are working in the background rather than you having to consciously focus on those systems.
A couple of bits to unpack there. And I think let's finish on these because these are practical things that we can take away. favourite breathing techniques, if you could give us what your favourite is.
Okay. 4, 7, and 8 is probably one of my most valuable techniques. I love that one. It was actually developed, if my memory serves me right, it was developed by a doctor in Beverly Hills. Not really for speaking, but it's actually really, really, really good because you essentially take in your breath through your nose for 4 seconds. You then hold that breath inside your lungs for 7 seconds and you breathe out through the mouth for 8 seconds. And what you're doing there is two things. You're naturally slowing down the rhythm of your heart and therefore the blood pressure and that side of things. And therefore, from an anxiety point of view, it feels like it's getting better. In terms of your lung capacity, obviously you're holding that breath. So you're starting to get used to the idea of actually taking in a big deep breath, holding that breath, and then utilizing that breath for sound as well. So that probably would be my favorite one. There are so many, though. I could sit here again all day and run through all these different techniques, but that would be my favorite.
So that's a great one. And then you mentioned about articulation strengthening. So tongue twisters, are there... Oh, yeah. Any that you could maybe start a day with or something like that, or just before you go on, just to warm that system up, what would you advise is a good one?
I would say my top three tongue twisters would be Peter Piper, Betty Botter, and How Much Would Chuck Chuck. If you Google those three, those are my three favourites. If you jump out of bed in the morning and go into a meeting, get one of those going in your mouth, and you will find that your tongue and your lips start to react in a good way.
Wow, that's great. Let's add that in to the morning meetings, Joe.
There we go, morning. I was going to say, now you've got all this public speaking advice, Zach. Are you going to give us a how much wood chuck. Would chuck?
If a wood chuck could chuck wood. Yeah, we'll work on it. We'll work on it. I'll get there. I've not had a coffee yet.
We'll get you some one-to-one lessons, guys. James. Yeah, we'll link you guys up after this.
Thanks so much, James. if people want to find you, what's the best route to pick your brains and work with you?
The best route is via the website, which is www.theelocutioncoach.com.
Perfect. We will make sure we add that in the bio below. Anything that we've not asked you that you think we should have?
I don't think so. These have been really good questions, actually. I talk about this all day, every day, whether it's to clients or people on the phone, but it's actually interesting breaking some of those down. And no, it's great. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you.
Our books are now open. Friends, Romans, countrymen, if you're looking for more sales, and that might be getting more meetings in the diary, meeting more of the right types of people, or breaking into a new area or sector, we've got you covered in two key ways. Number one, we can do it for you. We can kick the doors down, get you the meetings, and do the prospecting that you hate. Or number two, we can teach you how we do it, so you can do it for yourselves, creating repeatable, predictable results. So if you're interested in either of those things, www.wehaveameeting.com and hit the contact us form. Speak to you soon.